Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 26th, 2020. I'm your reader, Paula Carrezzi. In today's weather, today will be sunny, hot, and breezy with winds from the southwest from 10 to 20 miles per hour and a high of 95. Tonight, skies will be clear and the low will be 69. We'll enjoy 13 hours and 24 minutes of daylight today, with sunset tonight at 7:50 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow at 6:27 a.m. The lead story on today's front page is written by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette, entitled, Coronavirus Fears Sap CR School Bus Crew. The Cedar Rapids Community School District, which lost a fifth of its school bus drivers because of COVID-19, has warned Catholic school families the district likely won't be able to provide transportation for them this fall as before. And the August 10th derecho that damaged nearly every Cedar Rapids area school building has complicated matters further by pushing back in-person start dates and damaging 66 school buses, officials said. Quote, transportation will adapt to the needs of the schools and students, and we will adjust our plans as we determine the scope of building damage and decide on a return to school start date, district spokeswoman Colleen Scholler said. Cedar Rapids Superintendent Noreen Bush sent an email July 30th to parents of children at Xavier, Regis, St. Joseph, St. Matthew, All Saints, St. Pius X, Holy Family, and Holy Family St. Jude, telling them the district would not be able to provide free busing to more than 500 students as it has in the past for private schools. Quote, almost 20% of the employee group resigned in recent weeks concerned about their health, Bush said in the email. Quote, although CRCSD has spent the summer recruiting drivers, the gap has not been filled, end quote. Facing greater risk. AARP has reported that 73% of school bus drivers across the country are 55 or older, and many are in the 60-plus group more at risk of needing hospitalization if they get the virus that causes COVID-19. Corridor school districts are taking safety precautions such as requiring drivers and students to wear masks, and having students sit with their siblings and farther apart from other students. The Cedar Rapids District plans to have an attendant ride on each bus to enforce the rules and require hand sanitizing before and after riding. But the risks to drivers have prompted some to retire or sit out the 2021 academic year. The Clear Creek Amana District lost 7 drivers, and the Lynn Mar District is down 3 drivers and 3 attendants because of COVID-19 concerns, officials said. Iowa Central School Bus, a company that provides busing to the Iowa City Community School District, surveyed drivers and found about 20% have concerns about taking the wheel during COVID-19, but only one has taken a leave of absence. Among those sticking it out is Casey Jurgensen, aged 64, who has been driving a school bus in Iowa City for 15 years. She's the type of bus driver who in the past has posed a question of the day, led birthday sing-alongs, and let students announce during the Christmas season where they found their elf on the shelf. Quote, I am friends with the parents because of the children, she said. Their children love me, end quote. And for that reason, Jurgensen isn't sure going back to school in person is the right step. Union employees have participated in Zoom meetings with the district to learn what precautions will be taken to keep students and bus drivers safe. Quote, I'm going through the motions to see if we can do this without hurting anyone, she said. Districts make plans. Not having busing is a major challenge for some Cedar Rapids Catholic school families, said Chris McCarville, Xavier president. Quote, last year we had approximately 25 students use busing to Xavier High School, McCarville said in an email. Quote, we are currently working with those impacted families to help organize potential carpools for those who may need transportation, end quote. School transportation officials across the corridor are struggling to make plans with so much still in flux, including just when school will start and how many students, if any, will initially be going in person. Governor Kim Reynolds has said she will let Cedar Rapids and 13 other school districts struck by the August 10th derecho start the school year online instead of in damaged schools. A previous proclamation said all schools must provide at least half-time in-person learning unless COVID-19 cases spike. Bush said last week that Cedar Rapids district officials are waiting to set a start date until officials can do a building assessment of 30 properties and until utility companies can completely restore power and Wi-Fi. Xavier delayed its start date by a week to address storm damage. Families across the corridor have been given the choice of a hybrid of in-person and online schooling or virtual instruction only. Most districts set sign-up deadlines of mid-August, but then the derecho knocked out power and internet for many families, so counts may be incomplete. There's also a possibility that schools could close temporarily if counties have a coronavirus positivity rate of more than 15% during a two-week period, and if at least 10% of students are absent. Bus driver criteria. The Iowa Department of Education has not relaxed criteria for school bus drivers despite the shortage. Drivers must be at least 18, physically and mentally competent, and pass checks including criminal background, driving record, and drug and alcohol screenings, according to the state's school bus driver's handbook. Quote, "We have been working with the Iowa Department of Transportation to adjust processes for licensing new school bus drivers for this school year," Education Department spokeswoman Heather Doe said. The state extended deadlines for training by 1 month and provided extensions for drivers to renew their commercial driver's license, she said. A 14-day waiting period between taking the knowledge test and driving test was waived by Iowa DOT, so school bus drivers can take both tests the same day. In other front page news, Vanessa Miller of the Gazette reports, Herald scolds icy bars after unruly weekend. After crowds of maskless University of Iowa students were seen mingling shoulder to shoulder in Iowa City bars over the weekend, apparently rebuffing mask mandates and distancing guidelines, UI President Bruce Herold on Tuesday implored restaurants and bars to come into, quote, immediate compliance, end quote. After the university spent months and millions preparing to bring tens of thousands of students back to campus this fall amid the pandemic, Herold, in a so-called open letter to business leaders, cited the high stakes of letting students continue to pack bars and shed their masks as soon as they enter. Quote, "Your decisions will directly impact the university's ability to honor the choices our students made to be in our community and on our campus," he wrote. Quote, "Our students want to be here. The university wants them here, and the university knows how to keep them safe. Please help them stay safe here by doing your part," end quote. He slammed the establishments for sluggish enforcement and scolded them for a recent spike in virus cases. Quote, "Over the past 2 weeks, I have been exceedingly disappointed in some of the downtown Iowa City businesses and your choices to disregard the proclamation from the governor," he wrote. Quote, "These actions have led to an increase in the transmission of COVID-19 in our community, and we, as a community, will now have to respond. I am imploring you to adhere to the governor's proclamation, which, he said, requires Iowa bars and restaurants to ensure at least 6 feet of distance between each group or individual dining or drinking alone, ensure all patrons have a seat at a table or bar, and limit patrons from congregating closer than 6 feet. Other city leaders, too, have urged more compliance and, if necessary, stronger enforcement. Quote, "We need to put some more teeth into it," Iowa City Council member Pauline Taylor said Tuesday. Quote, "My call is out to those, and we know who they are, those owners and managers of those establishments that are not following these guidelines. We need to put some pressure on them, whatever that might be," end quote. She suggested peer pressure from other business owners. Taylor also asked the public to reach out to bar owners to urge compliance. She noted the state's Alcoholic Beverages Division has the power to pull liquor licenses. Quote, "We could do curfews," she said. "Heaven forbid we have to go through the steps of closing the bars. That's just a very last resort, in my opinion," end quote. Noting barriers the city faces in trying to cap the number of people in businesses and enforce face covering mandates, Taylor said UI student cooperation is paramount, although she didn't want to blame them entirely. Quote, "I think we need to stress more to the students, and I just wish that the university would help us out with that a little more," she said, before Harold's letter. Quote, "People are dying, people are sick, and these numbers are very scary," end quote. Johnson County added another 84 COVID-19 cases in a 24-hour period ending 11 a.m. Tuesday, continuing a string of 80-plus days for its three highest 24-hour periods to date. Quote, thank you to those that are following those guidelines," Taylor said, "but shame on those that are not. Shame on those," end quote. In addition to the governor's proclamation, the Iowa City Council issued an order July 21st mandating everyone wear a face covering in all public spaces where social distancing could not be achieved, and it barred businesses from serving customers who aren't in compliance. So far, Iowa City police have taken an educational approach to urging compliance. But Police Sergeant Derek Frank said that should educational efforts fail, quote, our options include criminal charges for individuals and bar staff, as well as working in conjunction with Iowa's Alcoholic Beverages Division, end quote. A July 30th statement from the State Division promised stronger enforcement and threatened $1,000 fines and possible license suspensions. But a spokesman said the division typically operates through a so-called complaint-based system, meaning team members must act only after receiving a complaint. Quote, ABD does do proactive inspections of establishments as well, and we are increasing these inspections with this enforcement initiative, said Jake Holmes with the division's Education and Outreach. The agency has increased enforcement statewide, according to Holmes, including in Iowa City, Ames, and Cedar Falls, home to the UI, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa. Asked whether it had investigators in Iowa City over the weekend, Holmes said he's, quote, unable to share specifics about these enforcement efforts at this time, end quote. Councilmember Taylor told the Gazette that despite complaints, some so-called glitch kept investigators from being here. Taylor believes division investigators are headed to Iowa City this coming weekend. She and other council members have flagged liquor licenses as a strong stick in getting bars to follow rules, even those that could hurt business. Quote, but we don't have the power to pull, as a city, to pull liquor licenses, she said. We cannot, but trust me, believe me, we would, and we would have a long time ago, end quote. Nancy Bird, Iowa City Downtown District Executive Director, noted most businesses, quote, are doing an excellent job, end quote, enforcing state and local mandates and restrictions. And she urged the importance of student responsibility. Quote, we need our student body and the demographic that's younger to really own it and take it seriously, she said. Ramifications, if both students and businesses don't increase compliance, could reach well beyond the downtown district, according to Tim Carty, co-owner of Table, a new restaurant in North Liberty. His establishment has been following mask mandates and keeping tables distant, curtailing potential revenue. Quote, we're making sacrifices for the greater good here. We want everybody to be able to stay open and to be safe, especially our staff and our guests. That's the most important thing to us, he said. But when I see pictures of crowded bars downtown, it just seems so disrespectful of so many people, end quote. And with the new case numbers rising in Johnson County, Carty said he's worried about the prospect of another shutdown, especially considered his business is so new it didn't qualify for federal aid. Carty noted everyone has had to make changes in response to COVID-19. Quote, every single business has had to pivot, except, seemingly, the bars downtown, he said. In other front page news, James Q. Lynch of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau reports, tour of damaged Czech village highlights aid. She lost trees, roofs, and windows on her properties, but Mary Kay Novak McGrath hasn't lost her optimism for recovery and restoration in Cedar Rapids' historic Czech village. Quote, I think we have to be, you know, we have to be optimistic, she said after leading a walking tour Tuesday morning of Czech Village for Governor Kim Reynolds and U.S. Small Business Administration Administrator Jovita Carranza. Novak apologized for how good the 16th Street Southwest strip of the neighborhood looked because, quote, people took it upon themselves to get everything cleaned up, end quote, in the wake of the August 10th derecho. Carranza noticed and was impressed by the cleanup efforts as well as Iowans' quote, resilience and adaptation, end quote. Quote, I know you were devastated based on the corn crops and the fatalities as well as many of the electrical power issues, but businesses are functioning, she said, so I'm very encouraged. Sure, it's devastation. Sure, it's overwhelming here. It's a 1-2 punch. It's three punches, a civil unrest and the natural disaster, and then there's also the COVID-19. Even with that, they've retained their employees and they are open for business in many cases, end quote. On their tour of Czech Village businesses, Reynolds and Carranza saw local damage from the derecho that caused an estimated $4 billion worth of destruction across the state, according to the governor's application for federal disaster assistance. They saw the roof damage at Lucky's. Cafe St. Pio remains closed while waiting for windows to be replaced. Soko Outfitters has reopened but sustained water damage. The brewing process at the Lion Bridge Brewing Company was interrupted 10 days without electricity. They also stopped at the iconic Skyora Bakery that was closed for 3 days after the derecho, a much quicker reopening than after the 2008 flood that dumped more than 6 feet of water on the sweet shop. Quote, we came back from the flood, we'll come back from this, manager Marna Triska told Carranza and Reynolds. Quote, Iowa's strong, Novak said. I feel like we're the little engine that could. We just get rolling, and then boom, we just keep coming back, end quote. And the SBA wants to help that comeback, said Carranza, who called the tour, quote, unique, with a level of engagement that I didn't expect, end quote. In addition to seeing the damage, Carranza said she visited Cedar Rapids to reassure small businesses that SBA disaster recovery benefits are available to them. The SBA and the Federal Emergency Management Agency are coordinating their efforts in Iowa, and U.S. Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue will visit next week to survey crop damage, Reynolds said. The state has 30 days to add more counties to the disaster list, and Reynolds believes FEMA individual assistance will be approved for more counties besides Linn. FEMA is making assessments in 7 counties. Quote, the assessments are taking place. Our team is on the ground, and they're working diligently to make that happen, she said. With Linn County approved for SBA assistance, quote, all of the counties that are surrounding Linn County also qualify for the SBA resources, Reynolds said. So that has a great impact on that surrounding areas, end quote. Linn County's individual assistance was approved first because of the amount of data about the damage that was captured in the days following the derecho, including surveillance from airplanes, she said. The governor said she also has been encouraged by Iowans' doggedness in the wake of the storm. Quote, they're like, okay, but one more thing. We are going to get through this. We are going to survive. We can do it. And already a lot of them started the rebuild efforts, Reynolds said. So that's inspiring to see that the tenacity, the resilience is so important to our state and to our overall economy, end quote. Merchants, homeowners, and renters can apply. Through the SBA, disaster assistance loans of up to $2 million are available to repair or replace damaged or destroyed real estate, machinery and equipment, inventory, and other business assets. SBA can also lend money to businesses and homeowners for the cost of improvements to protect, prevent, or minimize future damage. Homeowners can borrow up to $200,000 to repair or replace damaged and destroyed real estate, and homeowners and renters can borrow up to $40,000 for personal property damages. Interest rates are as low as 1.188% for homeowners and renters with terms up to 30 years. The interest rate for businesses will be 3% and 2.7% for nonprofits. Applications may be made at the website disasterassistance.sba.gov by calling the SBA at 800-659-2955 or emailing disastercustomerservice@sba.gov. The deadline for property damage is October 19th, while the deadline to apply for economic injury is May 20th, 2021. Separately, homeowners and renters in Linn County can apply for grants or direct payments, not SBA loans, under FEMA's Individual Assistance Program. Register at disasterassistance.gov. In the latest coronavirus numbers in the state, 57,156 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed in all 99 Iowa counties, and there have been 1,049 deaths in Iowa from COVID-19. Aaron Murphy of the Gazette reports, in convention address, Kim Reynolds praises Trump's response to Iowa storm. Speaking Tuesday night to the Republican National Convention, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds praised Donald Trump for his administration's efforts in assisting Iowa after the August 10th derecho that caused billions of dollars worth of damage across the state. In a pre-recorded message, Reynolds said Iowans helped each other after what she said was the worst storm in the state's history, then praised Trump. Quote, someone else also had our back, our president, Reynolds said, according to her prepared remarks. Quote, when the winds had finished raging and the cleanup had only begun, he showed up. You might not know because the national media didn't report it, but the Trump administration was here, in full force, end quote. Trump's visit was covered by several national media outlets, including The Washington Post, The New York Times, and USA Today. Quote, the day after the storm, the president called to assure me that we had the full backing of the federal government, Reynolds said. Quote, later that week, Vice President Mike Pence came to Iowa to again assure us that the president and his administration were behind us. With the help of the Trump administration, we've quickly received a major disaster declaration that will help Iowans get back on their feet. The president cut through the bureaucracy to do what was needed to be done, and to do it quickly, end quote. Pence was in Iowa to launch a so-called Farmers and Ranchers for Trump coalition at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. He pledged federal support for the state as it recovers, but offered no specifics and did not tour areas with storm damage. Trump's declaration covered only a portion of the governor's request. It did not include individual assistance for people in 27 counties whose homes were destroyed or had major damage, nor did it cover damage to farms, grain bins, and ag buildings. On August 20th, he approved individual assistance for Linn County among the hardest-hit areas, but Reynolds' office said other requests remained under review. Reynolds recorded her convention address Monday in Des Moines. The convention is being held in Charlotte, North Carolina, but like its Democratic predecessor the previous week, very little action is taking place on site amid the coronavirus pandemic. Speaking on the second night of the four-day convention, Reynolds also praised Trump for his response after severe flooding in western Iowa in 2019, providing relief to farmers who have struggled as a result of trade disputes, to which the administration has contributed, and for federal relief for workers and businesses impacted by the pandemic. Quote, "Because of President Trump and his leadership, our country is able to show resolve through adversity and see opportunity grow and thrive," Reynolds said, according to her prepared remarks. Quote, "This is an administration of action and outcomes. They are delivering every day on their promise to make America great again, and that's exactly why we need to re-elect President Trump in November," end quote. Earlier Tuesday, the Iowa Democratic Party held a news conference call in advance of Reynolds' speech. State Party Chairman Mark Smith and State Treasurer Mike Fitzgerald criticized Reynolds and Trump for their respective work on managing the pandemic. Smith alleged Reynolds and Trump failed to contain the virus, follow the advice of federal health experts, and offer, quote, "critical resources," end quote. Quote, "No matter what the governor said Tuesday night, she cannot paper over her failed COVID response," Smith said. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst is scheduled to address the convention Thursday. Turning now to the opinion section of today's Gazette. At the top of the page is a guest column written by Cecilia Rokosek, who is president and CEO at the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library. Her column is titled, "Resilience, Kindness, and Determination." "Never in my life did I imagine I would experience a hurricane in Iowa. Living in Florida for over 20 years and being in three hurricanes there, I have never experienced a so-called storm of this magnitude. As I drove home Monday, August 10th, all I could see was destruction in every direction. I kept thinking, how could this be? Two major disasters in 1 year? The pandemic is global, but this inland hurricane is regional and its devastating impact is everywhere in the derecho's pathway. As the president and CEO of the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library, all I could think about was, no, Cedar Rapids cannot be impacted again by a natural disaster. This is not fair. The next day was sunny and bright, and I saw the true Cedar Rapids spirit and glowing human sunshine. People helping people they did not even know. Neighbors meeting neighbors whom they did not know before the plan, a team-based cleanup. Faith communities from the area and from out of state helping complete strangers, quote, because it was the right thing to do, end quote. The images of destruction still were there, but were disappearing because of the kindness and tireless energy, resilience, determination and kindness of volunteers, neighbors, strangers, and of course our service angels from the utility companies locally, nationally, and even internationally from Canada. This was a horrific storm. We will feel its impacts in our community and region for months and years as we plant new trees for future generations. As we pause to be thankful for what we have, let us remember that the sun will continue to shine in our community, and it will shine even brighter if we continue to support our local businesses, nonprofits, art and cultural institutions, faith-based communities, and of course our neighbors. This is indeed Iowa. And again, this guest column was written by Cecilia Rokosek. Today's letter to the editor is written by Bruce R. Bachman of Cedar Rapids, entitled, "Economy Faced Problems Before COVID-19 Pandemic." Most people would say our economy was in good shape before the pandemic, but I want to mention some aspects of our economy that mean more to me than the stock market. A recent Gazette edition, July 29th, had an article on fighting hunger. Reportedly, 1 in 8 people, including 23,000 children, in HACAP's 7-county service area here in eastern Iowa are food insecure. Would so many people face hunger in a healthy economy? And would so many people have to line up for free hot dogs a few days after a storm hit? U.S. housing debt has reached a record level of over $14 trillion. 40% of households hold some credit card debt with an average of $5,700. Auto debt is $1.2 trillion. Mortgage debt is over $9 trillion, and student debt is over $1.5 trillion. Tax cut and deregulations have propped up the economy, but our deficit is over $3 trillion this year and is a record total of $26 trillion. Deregulation causes environmental degradation, followed by health problems, floods, fires, and other weather-related damage. It is a short-term strategy that feeds wealthy stockholders but causes extreme long-term costs to the majority of the population and to the planet itself. Our economy was suffering before the pandemic. I believe we can unite and build it back better with Joe Biden as president. Signed, Bruce R. Bachman of Cedar Rapids. Liz Lentz's column today is titled, The Real Natural Disaster. The derecho that hit Iowa on August 10th was Iowa's worst natural disaster so far. After all, 2020 has been a terrible year, and we shouldn't give it any more ideas. In the aftermath of the storm, Iowans are congratulating each other on coming together to fill in the gaps of our failed government response. Business leaders are posting virtue-signaling selfies of themselves handing out groceries to poor people with the hashtag #IowaStrong. And Iowans are helping Iowans. And we are helping because our city and state have failed us. There is no accountability except in neighborhoods where people have stepped up to organize relief that our city and county couldn't muster. But Iowans also are helping Iowans in another way. We are helping each other get COVID-19. In the days immediately after the storm, neighbors were helping neighbors up close and unmasked, breathing heavily, wiping sweat as we cut down trees and handed out food. It's hard to think about social distancing when lifting a giant oak off your roof, but COVID hasn't gone away just because we want to come together. Iowa's infection rate is more than 15%, making us the worst in the nation for infections per capita. During the past week, there have been an average of 571 cases per day. That's an increase of 25% from the past 2 weeks, and it's only going to get worse. In Iowa City, hordes of students are congregating in bars, swapping fluids and droplets. Do you know what you call a group of college students drinking at the airliner? An outbreak. In the Iowa Storm Resource Recovery page, a popular post asked for space to plan a large-scale picnic to celebrate the recovery efforts. While some comments called out the foolishness of this idea, many others were quick to say they weren't afraid and weren't going to live in fear, which is fine for you. But in the pandemic, this isn't about you. It's about the people who are high risk, whom you can pass the virus on to. It's about caring for your neighbor. And as easy as it is to blame individuals, this is a systematic problem. Iowans had to step up because our city and county and Red Cross left people homeless and waiting for help for 4 days and more. Iowans aren't wearing masks simply because they don't have to. Because we live in a state where the virus is allowed to burn through us faster than fires in a California forest. And I can hear the sound of your fingers clacking out angry emails already. But what about the anti-racist protests you will write? But here's the thing. Like the storm, the pandemic is disproportionately affecting Americans of color because of systemic racism. The very Iowans you are clapping yourself on the back to help are the Iowans who are in danger the most because of the systems we built and refuse to question. No amount of free barbecue sandwiches is going to solve inequality. In fact, if given out without a mask, it's only going to make it worse. So many of us were lucky to get out of the storm with our lives. More than 1,000 Iowans and more will not be able to say the same about the pandemic. Again, this was Liz Lentz's column for today. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 26th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Clarence Marilyn A. Klon, aged 80, died Monday, August 24th. Arrangements by Chapman Funeral Home in Clarence. Decora Curtis Rizzo, aged 88, died Thursday, August 20th. Arrangements by Fiesto Funeral Home in Decora. Elgin, Dora Lee Albertson, aged 89, died Monday, August 24th. Arrangements by Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Elgin. Hayesville. Ida May Lance, known as Maisie, aged 82, died Monday, August 24th. Arrangements by Powell Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Sigourney. Judy M. Leisinger, aged 78, of Cedar Falls, died Sunday, August 23rd. Arrangements by the Rife Family Center in Independence. Martin E. Holton. Public visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, August 28th at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Private memorial service will be held at Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories with interment in Cedar Memorial Park Mausoleum. Online condolences may be left for Martin Holton's family at www.cedarmemorial.com. Evelyn B. Neumeier, age 98, of Hollister, Missouri, and formerly of Cedar Rapids, died Saturday, August 22nd at the Point Lookout Nursing Home in Hollister, Missouri. Graveside services are 2 p.m. Saturday at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Evelyn was born January 11, 1922, in West Branch, the daughter of Russell and Jane Burke King. She married Robert C. Neumeier on October 15, 1938, in Iowa City. Robert passed away in 2005. Evelyn was a homemaker. She was a member of the boat club in Coralville. She enjoyed gardening and boating and was famous for her skills in the kitchen, baking delicious pies and desserts. Please leave a message or tribute at www.cedarmemorial.com. Robert Allen Williams Sr., aged 70, of Cedar Rapids, died Friday, August 21st, in Iowa City. The family will hold a celebration of life at a later date. Robert was born on August 16, 1950, in Cedar Rapids, where he attended Cedar Rapids Community Schools. He often reminisced about his high school basketball career and was part of the Washington High School 1969 state championship team. Robert worked various construction and customer service jobs throughout his life. Pauline Eloise Trout, aged 103, was born June 22, 1917, in Mount Pleasant. She died Tuesday, August 11. Visitation for family and friends is scheduled for 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, September 12, at the Gay and Chia Funeral Home in Iowa City. This is a date change. The burial service will follow at 3 p.m. at the Evergreen Cemetery in Fairfield. Condolences may be left at www.gayandchia.com. Fatima Kalel Olwan, known as Tima, aged 81, of Cedar Rapids, died Sunday, August 23rd at Higley Manor. A small service followed by graveside prayers at her final resting place, the Muslim National Cemetery, was attended by family and close friends on August 24th. Brosh Chapel and the Avicenture in Cedar Rapids are in charge of arrangements. Fatima was born February 1, 1939, in Cedar Rapids, to parents Emney and Albert Kalel. A member of the last class at Franklin High School, she graduated in 1957. Fatima married Jim Barnes on February 3, 1962, a union which produced her two loving children, Jeffrey and Julie. Her work life included positions as a bank teller at City National Bank and the office manager for Hedges Realty, Iowa Realty, and J.E. Adams Industries. In 1988, Tima married Kasim Olwan, and they made their home together at Regency Condominiums. For many years, Fatima was an active member of the Condominium Association board. They were married for 27 years until Kasim's passing in 2016. In lieu of flowers, memorials in her name may be directed to the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids. Virginia Ann Hartle Steinbach, aged 89, of Las Vegas, and formerly of Cedar Rapids, passed away Monday, July 20th, in Las Vegas. Private services will be held on Saturday, August 29th. A visitation will be at 10 to 11 a.m. at Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories. Virginia was born January 6, 1931, in Antigua, Wisconsin. She met and married Lee Steinbach following a whirlwind courtship in 1947 while Lee was on leave from the Army. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the American Cancer Society in Virginia's name. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.cedarmemorial.com. Evan Clemens, aged 84, formerly of West Branch and Iowa City, died at Trinity Center in Des Moines on Saturday, August 22nd. Private family burial services have taken place at the PD Cemetery near Springdale. Public memorial services will be held at a later date to be announced due to COVID-19. Memorial donations can be made in Evan's memory to the River Community Church in Iowa City or the Springdale United Methodist Church. For a complete obituary or to share a thought, memory, or condolence, please go to www.gayandchia.com. Cornelius William Thomas, known as Neil, aged 85, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Sunday, August 23rd at home after an extended illness. Visitation will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday, August 29th at Cedar Memorial Funeral Home. A private service will be held at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. Neil was born November 3, 1934, at Mercy Hospital in Cedar Rapids to William and Thelma Thomas. Neil served in the U.S. National Guard from 1952 to 1962. He was a loyal member, employee of Collins Radio Rockwell International for 42 years and held many different positions with the company. After retiring in 1993, Neil went to work for Modern Machine Engineering out of Minneapolis. During his retirement, he also worked at Irwin's Clothing in Marion for 2 years. Neil was an active volunteer for many organizations. He was very proud of his involvement with Variety Children's Charity for about 30 years. He was also a large part of the Cedar Rapids Evening Lions Club. He was a member of the First Congregational United Church of Christ for over 50 years. He was on many of the church boards and was an integral part of bringing the East Side Boys and Girls Club to their home at the First Congregational Church. Online condolences may be left for Neil's family at www.cedarmemorial.com. Vanita Collison, aged 97, of Marion, died Wednesday, August 12th at Unity Point St. Luke's in Cedar Rapids. The family will greet friends from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday, August 27th at Getch Funeral Home in Anamosa. Burial will be in Green Center Cemetery in Morley. Thoughts, memories, and condolences to Vanita's family may be left at getchonline.com. Dorothy Vanita Cozart was born August 21st, 1922 in Arlington, Iowa, the daughter of Clement and Della Greiser Cozart. She attended schools in Hopkinton and graduated from Hopkinton High School in 1940. She married Harry Eugene Barlow in Canton in 1940. The couple later divorced, and in 1977 she married Randall Ergerter in Iowa City. He died in 1986. She married Wendell Collison in 2002 in Cedar Rapids. She was employed as a supervisor at Rockwell Collins, retiring in 1985 after 25 years of service. The family wishes to thank the staff of Village Ridge Assisted Living in Marion for their excellent care and companionship. Marvin H. Shannon, aged 83, Marvin N. Shannon, aged 83, of Cedar Rapids and formerly of Pocahontas, passed away Monday, August 24th, at his home after an extended illness. Per his wishes, cremation has taken place. Burial of the ashes will be in Linwood Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. A family graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, September 5th, with Pastor Jane Thompson of Holy Redeemer Lutheran Church officiating. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. Marvin was born in Oroville, California on October 7, 1936, to Virgil T. and Gertrude F. Shannon of Johnstown, Colorado. At the age of 11, Marvin, with his parents and two brothers, moved back to Johnstown, where he attended school, graduating from Roosevelt High School in 1954. Richard Turner, Jr., aged 85, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Saturday, August 22nd, at Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital. Memorial services will be 1 p.m. at Papich Kuba Funeral Home East, 1228 2nd Street Southeast, with Richard Riley officiating. Burial will follow at Linwood Cemetery. Visitation begins at noon Saturday at the funeral home. Richard will be missed by his wife of 56 years, Ruth. He was born July 21, 1935, in Indianola, Mississippi, and at a young age came to Cedar Rapids with his family. He graduated from Wilson High School in 1953. He was employed as a welder at Langer Manufacturing Company from 1961 until his retirement in 1997. Richard was a member of Cedar Valley Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses. He was an avid UI football and basketball fan, as well as professional sports team. Robert W. Handley, known as Bob, aged 88, of rural Solon, died at his home on Sunday, August 23rd. Bob was born December 31, 1931, in Decorah, the son of Sylvester and Blanche Droll Handley. After graduating from Montezuma High School with the class of 1949, he spent 2.5 years at Notre Dame University. In 1952, he entered the United States Air Force, serving a 4-year enlistment and another 4 years in the reserve. Bob attended flying school in Des Moines, where he received his commercial pilot's license. He moved to California, where he taught for many years before returning to this area, where he joined his brother Terry and family in operating the Handley Christmas Tree Farm near Solon. Private family graveside services will take place at St. Stanislaus Cemetery near Hills. Public memorial services will be held at a later date to be announced. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made in his memory to the Solon Fire and First Responders or the Notre Dame Alumni Association. To share a thought, memory, or condolence with Bob's family, please visit www.gayandchia.com. Joanne M. Miller Gorton, aged 80, of Marion, died Monday, August 24th, of natural causes. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 29th, at Immaculate Conception Church. In Cedar Rapids, visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, with a rosary beginning at 4 at Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Service in Cedar Rapids. Burial will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Waterloo. Joanne was born May 25, 1940, in Waterloo, the daughter of Arnold L. and Leona F. Bedard Miller. She graduated from Dumont High School and worked for Wood Products in Waterloo for 3 years. She married Thomas R. Gorton at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Waterloo and was a stay-at-home mom for 25 years before going to work in 1967 for Congdon Printing in Cedar Falls. She retired in 2005. Support and memories may be shared at www.stuartbaxter.com under obituaries. Jana Pola of Williamsburg was born November 1, 1940, in Maquoketa, the daughter of Blair and Regina Swift Sagers. She graduated from Maquoketa High School and worked at the University of Iowa Hospitals as a chart controller for a number of years, and later in banking. She passed away Sunday, August 23rd, at the Highland Ridge Care Center in Williamsburg at the age of 79. A celebration of Jana's life will be 6:30 p.m. Friday, August 28th, at the Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg. Visitation to greet the family will be Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. Phyllis May Gordon of Knoxville, aged 67, died at home on August 21st after a long illness. She has been cremated and the family will hold a celebration of life on Saturday, August 29th at 1 p.m. at 1283 Hayes Drive in Knoxville. Bybee and Davis Funeral Home is handling arrangements, and online condolences may be left at www.bertrandfuneralhomes.com. Robert Allen Davis, aged 76, of Iowa City, died Monday, August 24th at Mercy One, surrounded by his family. Family committal services will be held at Memory Garden Cemetery. A celebration of life gathering will be held next spring. Robert was born December 27, 1943, to Richard and Florence Hobstetter Davis. He was a graduate of City High School, and on September 2, 1972, he married Patty Shelengoski in Iowa City. He served in the U.S. Air Force and was an electrician with Mid-American Energy for many years. He was a proud member of the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Online condolences may be left at www.lensingfuneral.com. Dorothy Eileen Furler of Williamsburg passed away on Monday, August 24th at Highland Ridge Care Center at the age of 93. A celebration of life service will be at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, August 28th at Trinity Lutheran Church in Conroy. Burial will be at Trinity Lutheran Cemetery. Visitation will be Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg. A memorial fund has been established for Trinity Lutheran Church, Lutheran Interparish School, or Highland Ridge Care Center. Messages and tributes may be left at www.powellfuneralhomes.com. Dorothy Jane Scott Messerall, aged 81, of LaGrange, Georgia, passed away on August 15th after a sudden illness. She was born October 9, 1938, in Cedar Rapids, to the late Norman B. Scott and Martha A. Gierke Scott. Mrs. Messerall was a graduate of the University of Iowa with a Bachelor of Arts degree in education. She started her career as a kindergarten teacher in the Wooddale, Illinois school district outside the Chicagoland area. Burial will be in Cochranton Cemetery in Cochranton, Pennsylvania, where her husband is also buried. The family will have a private memorial service in Perdido Key, Florida, later this fall. Online condolences may be sent through the website www.higginslagrangechapel.com. And that concludes the obituaries in today's Cedar Rapids Gazette. On the front page of today's sports section, Jeff Johnson of the Gazette reports seeing the light in Cedar Rapids. Parent of former Rough Riders donates 2,000 flashlights to devastated community. They filter in and out of this community on a yearly basis, but most Cedar Rapids Rough Riders players will never forget their brief time here. That's in a good way. The same goes for their parents. That's why you saw Marcel Worthers pull up in a rental truck last week to the Ira Derecho Relief Center at the Armar Plaza in Cedar Rapids with box after box after box of flashlights he wanted to donate to those without electrical power and in need. Quote, "It seemed like the nice thing to do," Walther said. "My son played here and he had a great experience. We know a lot of people here," end quote. Ethan Walthers played right wing for the Rough Riders in the 2018-19 season. He was in the British Columbia Junior Hockey League last season and is a freshman this year at the University of Massachusetts. The family is from Valencia, California, and that's where Marcel Walthers originally began his travels last week before eventually coming to the aid of Cedar Rapidians. He drove with a niece and nephew to the University of Oklahoma to help them move in for the school year, and that's where he found out about the devastation a derecho storm had done to the city. Walthers has been in the entertainment industry in Hollywood for 30 years as an engineer and in post-production, among other things. His current professional position is director of theatrical QC operations at PixLogic Media. But he's also an entrepreneur who developed several styles of what he labels the extreme LED flashlight. Quote, "There's a long story on the history of it," he said. "A few years ago, I was in over 100 Ace hardware stores. Now I'm doing a lot of Amazon sales, online store sales. We have branched out into the Midwest. We've got a warehouse, have started stacking stuff in there. I was going to bring stuff back to L.A., but here I am instead," end quote. Walther's flashlight warehouse is in Michigan. He drove approximately 1,100 miles from Oklahoma to Michigan, picked up 2,000 flashlights, and called Rough Riders coach and general manager and president Mark Carlson. Quote, "I just asked him, hey, you need some flashlights?" Walther said. "That was the goal," end quote. The Iowa Derecho Relief Center was created by local realtor Raymond Siddell and has done so much to help those in need during this crisis. It has served meals and given out food, water, supplies, and just about everything you could think of, all stuff that has been donated. Quote, "This is the community. It isn't me," Siddell said. "I just started a Facebook page," end quote. Quote, "I stopped by the I'm on Ice Arena on the way here," Walter said of the Rough Riders rink, which sustained heavy damage. Quote, "That was horrific. I took video to show Ethan. I visited the Billet family he stayed with here. He will be going back over there tonight. They have no power. It just seems like every street that was standing isn't standing anymore. Incredible," end quote. Like his willingness to help. Like so many others' willingness to help. In community news, Diana Nolan reports music returning to Bruce Moore Courtyard after the storm. Bruce Moore's landscape is forever changed, but the August 10th raging storm couldn't ravage the spirit of the historic estate. with staff and volunteers powering through the debris from 40 to 50 century-old sentinels and so-called hundreds of younger trees damaged by the derecho's hurricane-force winds, the shows will go on. Thursday begins a weekend rotation of concerts in the courtyard, one featuring music from Broadway to coffee shops, the other flashing back to 70s and 80s grooves. The first weekend, as well as several other performances, are sold out, but tickets are available for the remainder of the series through September 19th. Quote, with all the challenges this summer, our motto has been, if we can hold programming safely and there's interest, then we'll continue to find a way, said Tara Richards, Bruce Moore's director of community engagement. Quote, this took on a new meaning with the storm. We were actually loading in the tech equipment that Monday night, right before the storm hit, end quote. The crew and staff at the Carriage House took shelter in that basement, while other staff members at the mansion sheltered over there. The next day, Richards said they spoke with Gerard Estella, Bruce Moore's artist in resident, and the summer concert planner, who had been in contact with the musicians. They decided to wait a few days to see how the community's recovery was progressing and assess what it would take to reschedule the performances. A week later, they walked the areas critical for entering, exiting, and staging the concerts, seeing what would need to be cleared for safety's sake. They decided as long as the participants were still on board, they would push onward, Richard said. A big consideration, she added, was viewing this as a way to support the arts and cultural community still struggling in the wake of COVID-19 shutdowns. Details on the concerts will be at brucemoore.org. And music in the courtyard, again, will be Broadway to coffee shop music, August 27th through 30th, with tickets still available for the shows at 7:30 p.m. September 10th through 12th. Tickets are $100 per table, seating up to four people, with a $20 discount per table for Bruce Moore members. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for August 26th, 2020. I'm your reader, Paula Carrezzi. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.